Alright, this is the Radio Free Northwest call-in show. The date is September the 17th, 2015. And this episode, we're going to be soliciting comments from our callers on a couple of issues. The first is their personal experiences in the economic field with diversity, affirmative action, and so forth and so on. And also some of their personal experiences in their family situations. Not just their friends and relatives that have had bad experiences, but how their own families and loved ones and so forth have interacted or reacted to their white nationalist beliefs. This is kind of a sensitive subject for a lot of us, and I will probably be doing a lot less talking this episode because we're going to see if we can get some guys to come on here and basically tell their stories. But while we wait for our first caller, I suppose Don and I can natter a bit. There was the second Republican debate last night between the huge field of presidential candidates for the Republican Party. Donald Trump seems to have emerged from it unscathed, despite the fact that it was pretty obvious that everybody up there was gunning for him. I didn't actually watch it, but I have seen clips from it on the internet and heard various commentators like Rush Limbaugh have their say about it. And I saw one poll that said after the debate, Trump was ahead at about 53% of the people polled. Carly Fiorina was kind of sneaking up on him, which is not too surprising since that was the first real debate she was in. And trailing it a long distance was Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, who I think have their own little beaner support cheering sections. And everybody else was just down to like 1%. Jeb Bush was at 1%. Scott Walker, who actually does not appear to have been too bad of a governor of Wisconsin, was at 1%, and it's just ridiculous. The professional politicians are getting blown out of the water by Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson and Donald Trump and all of these people who are not professional politicians. And it's pretty obvious that the people of this country have just had it with this whole zoo up in Washington, D.C., and they're ready to vote for anybody that will badmouth the present system, i.e. tell the truth, and who is not part of the Washington establishment. This Trump thing, I have to admit, is going to be an interesting phenomenon to watch.
I like the way Trump is sticking pins in other people's balloons or pet ideas or maybe killing their sacred cows, however you want to put it. He's making them talk about things they don't want to talk about, and he's talking about things in a way that is more or less verboten in the mainstream press. So he's making them very uncomfortable, and of course the powers that be are unhappy about this. I still don't think he's going to make it to the White House because he's too much of a threat to the powers that be, but I agree with you, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. What will be interesting is if they can't stop him, or quote-unquote take him out in the normal way. I think the plan up until now is to try and trick him into saying something just really outrageous, maybe try and see if it's possible to trick him into dropping an N-word or something like that, or maybe an F-word. I notice that he does seem to steer clear of not only the nigger thing, but the homo thing. And he does seem to be concentrating on the immigration issue, which is very important to just about everybody that lives in this country in one way or another. It's not a really stupid or clownish strategy. He does seem to know what he's doing, and despite the fact that he acts like a carnival barker, I would not be at all surprised to see him come so close to the nomination that the Republicans have to start doing things that are really, really unorthodox. Like, for instance, some African maid in one of his hotels might claim that he raped her, or like they took out that one Jew, Strauss Kahn, or whatever his name was.
Yeah. But looking at his wives, I don't think anyone would believe that. Yeah. His current wife is this young fashion model type. It's really a stretch to try to convince people that he's screwing around on the side like that.
I don't know, maybe they'll claim they found kiddie porn on his computer or something. That's always a good one. It is 5:06. Where's our callers?
By the way, I think part of Trump's public clownishness is an act. His intelligent handling of hostile questions shows that he's not out of control psychologically. I think it's an act designed to throw his opponents off guard. I think it fits his strategy for them to think he's a bit of a buffoon and a fool so that they will underestimate him, and that makes it easier for him to deal with them.
And again, look at the topics that he avoids. The racial issue, as far as the black and white thing, he is supposed to have 25% of the African-American vote and all that sort of stuff. As I said on RFN, if the Republicans somehow get the idea that he can basically get 25% of the blacks to break the electoral plantation and leave the Democrats, that might actually bring the Republican establishment around to, well, maybe, I don't know, because that's always been one of their big dreams. The Republicans have always had this weird obsession with getting large amounts of niggers and Mexicans to vote for them, which, so long as they allow this situation with the media and they allow themselves to be vilified as they are, is not going to happen. And which, again, is unfair because really both the Republicans and Democrats ideologically are still pretty much the same. They want massive state or some kind of control over the population. They don't like small business. They want everybody working for a paycheck. It's just the Democrats believe that that paycheck needs to come from the benevolent state, and the Republicans want it to come from a multinational corporation. But they have dreamed of getting these non-white minorities to break the Democratic plantation and vote for them. And if Trump can convince them that he's able to do this, it's possible that they might actually decide to back him with this idea that somehow if he gets into the Oval Office, they can control him. Maybe they can. I don't know. I think in that case, once he actually got into the White House, number one, he would be rather overwhelmed by the actual size of the problems he was being forced to confront. And at that point, the manipulation protocols would set in, and he would basically find himself kind of a prisoner in the Oval Office. I question whether any American president really has the power, even if he has the will, to bring about any serious change. Well, I did get one email from a guy in Georgia who said he would definitely be calling, but not yet, apparently.
Well, talking a little bit more about the presidential race, Hillary has officially dropped below the level of support she had at this point in the 2008 election cycle. So she is worse off now than she was in 2008 when she didn't win the nomination.
I can't see this old hippy-dippy red Bernie Sanders actually doing anything serious, because you got to bear in mind that Hillary has still a large part of the machine lined up behind her. She's got this Jewish Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's the Democratic National Committee chairwoman, completely on her side, who is clearly manipulating the debates in her favor. She has a huge reserve of cash. They figured that was one of the reasons she lost in 2008, was all of a sudden this cash started appearing in Barack Obama's bank accounts off the internet. Basically, it came from George Soros. You know, I have my names for the Hildebeest and the Sea Hag. I was catching up on some of the columns of my favorite Jew, James Howard Kunstler, today. And his name for her is Rodan the Flying Reptile. She's flying over the presidential campaign going, "Car, car." The thing is, of course, will Biden get into it? I think he probably doesn't really want to, or he'd be in by now. Obama's probably waiting to see if this email thing is going to metastasize into anything that'll take her out. I'm sure at some point they'll do something to actually recover the emails, which I'm sure can be done with a little bit of technical derring-do. If not off the server, they can track down and subpoena the recipients' and senders' copies, and eventually they should be able to reconstruct most of them.
I don't think that they're even going to have to go that far if they're serious about it.
You're on Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
This is Richard in Virginia.
Hey, Richard. As you, I'm sure, saw in the email this evening, we're looking for people to share their personal experiences in two kind of areas in their lives as white nationalists. Number one is personal experiences that they've had in the economic situation, in the workplace, affirmative action, racially motivated layoffs, and so forth. And secondly, experiences with family members dealing with racial issues, how your own family deals with you, etc., etc. I won't be doing as much talking as I normally do on these things because this is you guys' chance to tell your stories here. So, is there anything along that line you would care to share with us?
Yeah, along the line of economics, but mine is kind of opposite, I think, of what you're looking for. It didn't really hurt me. As a matter of fact, it caused me to have a pretty good income at different times. A little bit about my background. I worked in construction for most of my working years, and I went there because the money was good. I do have one little vignette I could tell you about. I used to work in microwave electronics. I worked for a subcontractor for the Apollo project. We were a small company, but we're doing government work, so we had to hire a black. We had to hire a Negro, to look good for the government. So we hired this guy who was supposed to be a microwave technician. The guy did absolutely nothing. You know what he did?
What?
He dressed very well, and he smoked a pipe, and he wore glasses. Whenever we would have a meeting where he was there, all he did was smoke the pipe and shake his head up and down, which was a waste of money for the poor owner of the company because he was just doing what the government wanted. But to go back to how it benefited me, actually, was I worked in construction. I got a lot of work because where I grew up and where I worked, when the state had trouble with the blacks, what they do is throw money at them.
Right.
Keep them quiet. So we got building projects left and right. So I benefited from it. I also got a good education from it because one of the jobs I did, which was very informative about blacks and how they operate and how the real world operates in their environment, we did a mechanical fit out for a high school in a big city. And you wouldn't believe, and it's all run by blacks, how poorly everything is run. First of all,
I think we'd all believe it.
Yeah, but I mean, I learned firsthand. To go into the school, you pass metal detectors. All the doors are chained shut. The place is filthy dirty. They don't have any hot water. It goes on and on. And they're incompetent. And all they want to do, because I represent the contractor, I was the guy running the job, all they would do is hit me up for money all the time. If you're going to use this phone, the principal's going to need $150 a week. It goes on and on. The staff, most of them are on drugs. It was just a real eye-opener for me. When you see it firsthand, the way things are run. But I got paid good, and I was there for 6 months, so you know, it was great. I never really got hurt that bad because I knew enough to stay away from them. I always had this feeling that they were bad news. You just avoid them in your life. I have had some dealings when my kids were in school with them and complained, but they don't do anything anyway. But that's about the extent of my dealings with them where I saw some kind of an effect. But fortunately for me, economically, it was good.
A friend of mine back in North Carolina did construction as well, and back in the early 80s, his company was a subcontractor on a job where they were building public housing projects in Greensboro, North Carolina, for basically niggers. I'm not quite sure whether it was one of these high-rises or one of these sort of townhouse type. Usually in North Carolina, there'd be like long rows of bungalows. We didn't have too much in the way of high-rise public housing, except maybe in Charlotte or places like that. He did a number of these public housing projects, and he said there were bungalow-type housing units they were building. Well, not too bad. They'd be like 2-3 bedrooms. They had some nice fixtures. They had nice light fixtures. They were all properly wired. The plumbing all worked. It was utilitarian. It wasn't luxurious, but it was not a bad place to live. They finished this project, however many units it was, and went on their way. And about 6 or 7 years later, as it happened, his company was also contracted to go in and try to repair the damage that X number of niggers had done to this place. This was a very short time between the time these things were brand new and the time that literally the city had to condemn them because the pipes had all been torn out, they had beaten holes in the wall. The interior was not just filthy. Basically, they had been given these brand new housing units, and they had torn them to pieces. And it wasn't even just sloppy or careless living or anything like that. They would set the places on fire. They would literally just smash the fixtures for no reason. They all came, of course, with things like washers and dryers and refrigerators and stoves and everything like that. They'd tear these things out and just take them out and dump them in the yard. According to this guy who had actually built these things and known what they looked like, what they were supposed to look like, it was just plain wanton destruction for no other reason than for destruction's sake. No amount of orgies or riotous living could have done that kind of damage in just a few short years. He was convinced that the niggers actually made it a point. When they were given something nice by the white man, they tore it up just out of hate. Down through the decades, I've just heard so many stories like this. It's almost the same as it is with the Jews. all white people have pretty much the same stories to tell about niggers.
I remember when I was a young boy, I was a teenager, I had uncles that installed elevators around New York metropolitan area, and they would put elevators in the new projects. This is back in the 50s now. What you're talking about isn't recent developments. This has been going on for 70 years. Back in the 50s, I can remember sitting at the Sunday dinner table, listening to my uncles talk, and they said that they worked on the projects in the city, and they have to come back after they install the elevators and do a little tune-up and a little repair or whatever, and they go back in 6 months, and the place is a disaster. They've ripped out the plumbing. The front door is off the hinges, laying under the couch in the living room. Mm-hmm. He says they're using the elevators for bathrooms. This is a long, long time ago, so it's got to be in the blood. It's nothing somebody did to them. That's just the way they operate. They can't operate in a civilized society.
As any zoologist can tell you, the great apes, the primates, specifically orangutans and gorillas and chimpanzees, are one of the very few animals in nature, for whatever reason, will actually foul their own nest. Most animals basically will leave their nesting area in order to excrete when they're eating something, when they get through with the bones or whatever, they'll actually take it out of their nesting area or their den or their lair. It's a sort of a certain natural cleanliness, even for animals, not to want to live in their own detritus and filth. But for some reason, the great apes, the gorillas, the chimps, and the orangutans are not like that. They will actually literally foul their own living quarters, their own nest. And I think we're seeing that with blacks, because they are much closer to actual primates than they are to the higher human species, which is us.
Maybe they're marking their territory, too.
Yeah.
When I did the mechanical fit-out in that school, if nobody was around, they had to take a leak. It was in the stairwell. Unbelievable. There's no need for it. It's just where they are. They're primitive. They don't belong here. No great hate in my heart for them, but they just don't belong here. They can't function here.
I remember at the time of the Baltimore riots, I was on the web reading all these sob story type features about how horrible life is in the Baltimore ghetto and how these people are just so frustrated and they're so hopeless and the white man has just done them so much wrong and they just have to explode every now and then and burn everything down around them. This reporter, this bleeding heart liberal, was interviewing the coons on the street either just before or after or maybe during while they were rioting and throwing rocks and setting fire to things, etc. And she found some coon who was semi-articulate, and he was saying, but you see, we just feel so frustrated, we just feel so angry every day because we wake up and we see that this is all we've been given. There's something very interesting about that phrase to me. They were revolting and setting fire to things and rioting because they weren't happy with what they'd been given. Apparently, the black mindset automatically assumes that it is their right to be given things by the white man. When they don't like it, they riot and they show their butts.
You know whose fault that is? That's the white man's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know why? Because they know if they burn the place down, if they riot and they whine and they cry and they cause a bunch of mischief, guess what? They get things. They get free stuff.
Well, they got those six cops indicted in Baltimore. The city of Baltimore recently settled a deal with the family of that scam artist, Freddie Gray. God knows what his family is like, but they settled even before there was a lawsuit. And they're getting something like $3.4 million. It's insane.
How about Rodney King when he got that beating in Los Angeles that he got from the cops? Got the big sum of money. What happened to him? He did the same thing he was doing before. Drugs. He drowned in a swimming pool.
I know he kept getting arrested even after that because he was high or he was driving drunk or he was beating on his old lady.
Or he was trying to pick up transvestite hookers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what good did the money do him? Money doesn't do him any good. And we're stuck with him. And the usual suspects are jamming him down our throat. And everybody's made to feel guilty because of the situation they're in. And all the religions, they're bending over backwards for them.
This is Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
Are you having fun dodging raindrops on the east side?
Oh, a few. Who's this?
The trucker.
Okay, we've got two of you now. We've got Richard in Virginia, and we got the trucker. Trucker, what we're doing here is, as I said in my preliminary email, we're getting people to call in and talk about their personal experiences with diversity in two general areas. Number one, the economic area, workplace, affirmative action, racially motivated layoffs, getting bossed around by incompetent coon supervisors, or what have you, all the wonderful joys of economic life in a diverse America, and also people's family lives, their personal struggle, I guess, as white nationalists with not just members of their own family, but trying to get members in their community, friends and family, to kind of come around and so forth. So anything you would care to add in either of those two areas of discussion?
Being in the Navy and stuff, I did have to work in a diverse work environment, but I don't have to worry about that anymore. And the company I work for, we have integrated driver force, but as far as the company's yard and stuff, everybody there be white. My wife's in the same boat I am because we run team together.
Well, you've mentioned in some of your tidbits that you send me about, okay, your company sounds pretty good, but some of these places you go and you find a whole freight yard full of nothing but Mexicans and jigaboos.
Oh, yeah. There's places where English is definitely not the exact spoken language. You've got to hunt to find somebody that actually can speak English at some of the places we deliver to and pick up from.
You travel all around the country. In your opinion right now, where is the worst part of America to be in? What's racially, economically, socially, infrastructure-wise, where in America right now, outside of, say, something obvious like Detroit, which is a total, complete dead zone now, I gather, but where is the worst part of this country to be, you figure?
I'd have to say a lot of it's California and stuff. I mean, not only have you got the Mexicans in there, you've also got a lot of Muslims in there. Fresno is more like Fresno-nistan, you know? They've basically taken over certain cities, like Dearborn, Michigan, for one, and Fresno, I mentioned. California, it's basically a wide-open door policy down there, it seems like.
I am told by people who have been down there that outside certain coastal areas, which are fairly wealthy, in places like San Francisco, which has got all the techies and the rich faggots and whatnot there, and you get Los Angeles with your movie colony, Hollywood, Bel Air, blah, blah, blah. But large parts of Central California right now literally, physically resemble Mexico. You drive down a half-paved road full of potholes, and what you see is tar paper shacks and concrete bunker-type houses, and everything's in Spanish.
About half the billboards down there in California are in Spanish. A few that are in English, the rest of them are in Middle Eastern language and Arabic. Fresno's in the middle of the state. The I-5-99 corridor there, it's just ridiculous. It's just nothing but Hispanics and Arabs down there. And see a lot of them in the trucks, too. A lot of Mexican trucks coming across the border, and you've also got the Arab drivers.
I remember the time they brought in NAFTA, there was a lot of people, especially in the trucking industry, that were really upset about allowing these big Mexican double-trailer trucks into the country. Are they as bad as they're made out to be?
You get down around the border towns, I don't know how they're even on the road. Some of them are really junk trucks. Now, the ones they let outside the border zone, they're in a little bit better shape. They've got a lot newer trucks that actually come farther into the country, but down there along the Nogales area and El Paso and stuff, you just see rolling wrecks coming down the road.
I had something I wanted to ask you. There was a lot of talk about this a couple of years ago. It was a super highway coming from Mexico to Canada, and everybody was against it, but they were building it anyway, and all of a sudden things are silent. Is that still in the works, do you know?
As far as I know, yeah, it is. I think it's I-65 they're trying to go and make go all the way up there, because I-35 goes down around the San Antonio area, but 65 kind of does a little bit of an angle, and they're expanding more and more of it. It's not a through road yet, but I'm not sure where it's going to end up in the southern end, but they're trying to make it all the way from one end to the other.
I read about that a few years ago, actually, and I think it's from a port, I don't remember the name, in Mexico, and then it goes up through Texas all the way up to Canada, I believe.
Would the port be Matamoros, or which I think is right across the river from Brownsville?
No, it's on the Pacific coast of Mexico, and the idea, I think, is for international trade to go through that port through Mexico and then up through the rest of North America.
Yeah, container ships, probably.
Yeah, that superhighway they're talking about, they want to have both rail lines running right alongside the interstates going through there. As far as I know, they were talking about trying to do the eminent domain thing to take over a lot of farmland through Texas, and the Texans were all up in arms about it, but I haven't heard about it here lately.
Something sticks in my mind, 10-lane superhighway, guarded exits or something like that.
Yes, I saw a picture illustrating that, and at the core of it were railroad lines, and then on one side there was civilian cars and small trucks, and on the other side there were lanes dedicated to semis for long-distance hauling.
I think this gets back to this whole North American Union and all that sort of stuff. It's the sort of the ultimate globalization. The idea is we ship all of our manufacturing out of the country where it can be done by coolie labor of various kinds in various third world countries, and they manufacture our own raw materials in some cheap plastic format or whatever, and then ship it back to us and sell it to us here. But I've always wondered about that, because the idea is that all this stuff is supposed to be produced in the third world, and we're supposed to be the market that everybody makes their profit off of. But if we don't have any decent paying jobs here, and if we're getting our houses foreclosed on, and if we've got whole families living in Obamavilles and under bridges, how exactly are we supposed to be the market that's going to make all this thing profitable? I think we would be appalled if we understood just how completely incompetent the people who are running things are, and how little they plan ahead. That's one of the things that kind of cools me on conspiracy theories, etc., etc. The idea that these people are all-powerful and all-seeing and all-knowing, and they're pulling all the strings from behind the curtain and all this sort of stuff. I swear to God, I think the people that actually set all this up, I think maybe 10 minutes ahead on a good day. Because this whole globalization thing doesn't make sense economically, never mind any other way.
It makes sense from the point of view of destroying national sovereignty, in particular in the example that we're talking about here, destroying the sovereignty of the United States. The Jews don't want powerful sovereign countries to exist because they consider that a threat.
Well, it's like Bill White says, the ultimate goal is one world government run by the Jews based in Jerusalem. And I know a lot of people think Bill has been driven mad by his time in prison or something, but I saw that same thing in a book, I think I may have referred to this before, that I read back in the late 80s, like A History of the Jews by a Jew named Max Diamond, D-I-M-O-N-T, and he said the very same thing, that the ultimate goal of the Jewish people from time immemorial has been what he called a brotherhood of man, which is essentially a one-world government or empire run by the Jews from Jerusalem. And so it's not as if Bill is making this stuff up, but yeah, a lot of this stuff, I admit, you know, conspiracy theory or not, does not make sense unless you look at it in the context or on the basic premise of a plan to destroy the white race and to destroy all national sovereignty and to basically let the Jews take over the world. People laugh at that, oh, you're crazy, you're a kook, you're a crank, but the fact is, it makes a very definite, horrible kind of sense once you're familiar with the facts.
You know, the Elders of Zion, with their manifesto, it seems like they've had this idea for a long time, and they're working towards it, and they're all cooperating, and little by little, that looks like that's where we're going, and I think that's one of the things that prompted Henry Ford to do his Independence. That was more or less an investigation to see if this is really so. What he came up with, it looks like they're still on course.
Getting back to tonight's topic, diversity is a way to destroy nations. In fact, the idea of a nation is a common homogeneous people, and diversity destroys that.
And now, of course, we're having it forced on us. Europe is getting these swarms of hundreds of thousands of alleged Syrians. I'm not quite sure that Syria even officially has that kind of population. It's obvious that these wogs and these niggers that are coming in are not all Syrians. Even the ones that are being interviewed are admitting that they're from Iraq. They all seem to be young men of military age. At least a number of them are almost certainly ISIS plants. And basically what this is an Islamic invasion of Europe, and nobody's really, except the Hungarians, is even lifting a finger to stop it. Over here, of course, we had the same thing last summer with all these children. They were fleeing on their own, running away from home to come to America and all this sort of, and it turns out most of them were gang members, and the so-called children were like 17, 18 years old. Most of these big migration waves of third world is coming into white countries have been young, unemployed, illiterate, and violent men. What's happened is they figured out that white people won't fight back. They won't resist. I think for many years, the government of the United States has been terrified of those 300 million privately owned firearms that are tucked away in closets and gun racks in most American homes. But they finally figured out that we're not going to take them out of the closet, we're not going to take them out of the gun rack, so they can do pretty much what they want. I think that's when history will record that things really started going bad. It's when Barack Hussein Obama finally understood in his little mulatto brain that he could, in fact, do anything he wanted and nothing would be done about it. He proved this on November the 20th, 2014, which is a date I've mentioned before. I know I'm considered to be obsessed with it, but that's it. That's the day America ended, and you guys have to understand that we are living in a post-constitutional, post-republic America right now. The American Republic, the last vestige of it that we would recognize, ended on that date.
Yeah. This thing with Syria, I was doing some thinking about the situation with the immigrants flooding Europe. It seems to me that this whole thing was planned long before. In other words, we caused a disruption in the Middle East and with Syria, and I firmly believe that some vestige of the American government is supplying ISIS. When I saw John McCain over there, I knew something was wrong. We're fomenting this ISIS thing and this unrest in Syria. Make things so bad that people with families and kids, they pick up and leave. They want to go somewhere. By us destroying the culture of Syria and having the people leave and they head north across the Mediterranean to go to Europe to get away from it.
That's the official story. Talking about people with women and kids, 80% of these migrants are young men of military age. Okay, I know that there have been some very spectacular photos on the internet and in the news media and on CNN about Syrian women hugging on the railroad tracks in Hungary and hugging their babies and screaming and all this sort of stuff. And the little drowned boy on the Turkish shore and all this BS. But the fact is that the overwhelming number of these invaders are just that. They are young men of military age. They all, from what I have seen on the net, seem to be fairly physically fit, fairly well nourished for people who have been allegedly living in a war zone for the past 3 or 4 years. That makes me suspicious.
Some people claim on the internet that this current group of people consists of mostly people who've come from some camps in Turkey, and now Turkey is dumping them onto Europe, and that this is not what it seems to be. It's a created crisis for the moment. While there are people continuing to flee from Iraq, Syria, maybe Afghanistan, just places where there's combat, the large numbers occurring at once right now is the fact that Turkey is dumping these people onto Europe.
It could be like Castro's Marielita boat lift.
Yeah, except that these people are not selected for being criminal or psychiatric cases.
To get back to my point, they stabilized the area to cause the refugees, immigrants, whatever you want to call them, to leave and go to Europe. Now, they get to the southern part of Europe, and it seems like they're getting resistance. But in their mind, they want to get to the Nordics. They want to get north.
That's what they've stated.
Now, I'm looking at the population of Europe. The Nordics, and let's call them the Alpine or Southern Europeans, they don't seem to be as infected with this egalitarianism as the Nordics are.
It's a disease I've never understood, especially among the Scandinavians. But again, I remind you, these so-called migrants are 80% young, virile males. Where do they think, once they get to Sweden or Denmark or Norway or Germany, where do they think they're going to find female companionship? Obviously, they're not bringing their own women with them. So
walking down the street.
Yeah, exactly. This is why in Sweden especially, there is an epidemic of rape now where there was virtually none. I mean, for many years in Sweden, rape was a crime that was virtually unknown. But there is an epidemic of it now because you've got all these Muslim migrants, again, most of whom even before this were young males, and they are brought into this country where there's almost no available women of their own religion, not just because they're not there, but because their own religion so highly restricts interaction between the sexes. Basically, if you're a Muslim and you want to get some, you've got to arrange a marriage with a girl's family, etc., etc., and all that BS. So that's not really possible in a fairly new immigrant-opened area like, say, Sweden, because there's not that many established Muslim families. And so, naturally, what they do is they assault the local women, or try to seduce them, or use them as prostitutes, or whatever. And again, the overall effect is to attempt to dilute the racial strain. Again, despite my reservations about most conspiracy theories, it is just getting really, really hard not to see some kind of deliberate intention in this. It's like if you could pick something that would destroy the Nordic peoples short of an actual atomic nuclear attack, this would be it.
Which is leading up to my point. What is the catalyst that takes the Nordic people to give up their racial identity and to give everything to foreigners who really hate them? They're really the enemy. But yet I think I've read something in Sweden about they were kicking Swedes out of buildings and apartments to make room for the immigrants. Yeah. Well, and this Angela Merkel, she's totally nuts.
Yes, Germany is the other nation in the so-called Nordic group. It's the Scandinavian countries plus Germany. The reason they can get away with it is because the government is basically controlled by the Jews.
We have two very serious weaknesses that may destroy the white race. Guilt and compassion. In Germany, it's a case of guilt. You are so guilty because of World War II. You did these horrible things to the Jews. Therefore, you must atone. You must give your land and your money and your industry and then your daughters and your women, your culture, everything. You must give to these people to atone for your Hitler evil. That is still the official cultural and political and ideological line in Germany. And so far, the German people have not yet been able to nerve themselves to get their asses out of their brow houses and whatnot and get into the streets and do what has to be done to put an end to this. And in the Scandinavian countries, I think it's compassion. The Scandinavians actually succeeded in making a nice, lovely little life for themselves. They used their resources well. They had a racially homogenous population, all of whom actually worked, even if it might not have been wild capitalist profiteering, but...
They're an industrious people.
Exactly. They were industrious, they were clean, they were orderly, they were organized, and in those circumstances, yes, it is possible to construct a form of welfare state or socialism or whatever you want to call it that works and makes a nice little pleasant life for everybody. No one's too rich, no one's too poor. Within that limited little bubble, as long as those conditions prevail, specifically the homogenous population, yeah, it's possible. I saw some of this in Ireland. Of course, I was in Ireland when it was still a white country. Then the little worm of compassion starts eating at the white man's brain. He says, oh, I'm just so fortunate. I have my lovely little house and my lovely little garden and my color TV and my lovely little blonde children running around. And I'm just so happy and it's so wonderful. I must share my good fortune with others. It is incumbent upon me, who have so much, to be kind and generous to those who have so little. And, of course, the whole issue as to why they have so little and why the hell they can't create that type of society in their own countries just never arises, because, again, it's being manipulated by the Jews. And I kind of tend to go with Bob Miles' definition, who told me once, says some of the worst Jews you'll ever meet won't have a drop of Hebrew blood in their veins. Judaism is a state of mind. I think a good example of that would be the socialist functionaries and the socialists who run the Scandinavian countries. I consider them to be some of the worst Jews I've ever seen, and they're all probably blonde-haired and blue-eyed. I've noticed this. It's almost like the blonder and more blue-eyed they are, the worse race traitors they are. I have no idea why that would be. You would think that they would want to preserve this wonderful gift they've been given by God, but they just apparently want to just throw it away and piss on it.
Harold, there are people like that in every country. And the reason they can get the upper hand is because the Jews are helping them. The Jews control the media in the Scandinavian countries completely. And the message that the people get, and the school system and the government, of course, being captured by the Jews, this prevents a natural balance. Without the Jewish influence, a much more natural and healthy balance politically would exist in the Scandinavian countries. And in the United States, for that matter. And the reason it doesn't exist is because of the influence of the Jews. They like to think of themselves as the people who tip the scales. In a more vulgar way, we say they have their thumb on the scale. but they use their influence to change the balance in the direction that they want it to go. If they weren't there, Scandinavia would not be like it is now. They wouldn't be inviting every third worlder into their country and feeling that they have to take more and more, and that they can't understand why can't these people adapt to our culture and accept their culture. They demand that we accept theirs. The Scandinavians will not put up with that crap if it wasn't for the Jewish influence. Mm-hmm. Their domestic political balance would change dramatically.
Harold, what you said about Pastor Miles, what he said, here are people not an ounce of Jewish blood in them, but they adopt the Jewish way. It's almost like they've been infected. It's almost like a virus that gets into them.
And, it's a form of madness, yes.
Which reminds me of a movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which almost parallels what's happening. And there was another campy movie, I think it was a wrestler, Roddy McDowell or something.
They Live.
Yeah, They Live. That was another good one. You know?
That was a very good one.
You would think people would pick up on that, but unless you're racially conscious, I guess you don't.
That's something I've never been able to wrap my mind around, because when you really look at it, all of this liberal crap, it just doesn't make sense. And sometimes you want to scream at our own people and take them gently by the lapels and bang their heads on a cinder block wall for a while and just rattle around whatever mush is between those ears and just yell at them, stop being so effing stupid. Because the whole liberal ideology, the whole narrative, just does not make sense. It's clearly not true in the most part, and it contradicts what people can see with their own eyes about such things as race and economic whatever, and it just... You guys, anything else that you would like to say regarding your own personal experiences, either in your family, in the workplace, anything with diversity? Because every white American has horror stories to tell.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that happened to me. I have two daughters growing up. I lived in a town where the schools were, there were niggers in school, and there was Puerto Ricans. And my little blonde-haired, blue-eyed daughters weren't going to that school. So it cost me about $4,000 a year to send them to a private school. I don't know whether that was good or bad, because that school was loaded with Jews and people with a lot of money. And, of course, I'm just a working man at the time. That kind of made me feel a little bit bad. Wasn't with what I figured were my equals. So that went on for a few years until the cost got so high I couldn't handle it anymore. So I moved out in the country. I built a house out in the country, and I moved out the country. Nice little country school, no niggers in sight. Great. That lasted until they went to high school, which was a regional high school, and they took in a lot of minorities from different towns in the area. And that's when the trouble started. That's when I had to go to school and read the Riot Act to them, and I'm putting up with this shit. And if you guys don't do something about it, there was a black guy that was selling drugs. I probably had him arrested after threatening the county prosecutor with a lawsuit if he didn't do something about it. Didn't hurt me, hurt my daughters in school. They got through it and got out all right, but it sure made a little turmoil in my life. I would have much rather at that stage in my life lived in an all-white area where they wouldn't have to put up with that stuff. And of course, the kids, they go through an indoctrination in those schools when there's mixed races. Kids have good hearts. They don't want to see bad in anybody. So when somebody whines and cries, they feel sorry for them, and they think they're okay. It takes a while for them to learn. It's a traumatic experience for them. This diversity thing, I think, hurts the kids. It makes them backward in developing to understand who they are and what's valuable in this world. They come out of the education process, the indoctrination process, I should say. It takes some years to undo the damage was done and come to the reality of who they are and the way the world really works, and hope they didn't get damaged along the way.
Trucker, how did you first get involved with niggers and the joys of diversity?
Well, I grew up living about an hour north of Detroit, and there for the 67 riots and stuff. I grew up in an all-white town, so we didn't have any in our schools, either elementary, middle school, or high school. They were up north of us in Port Huron and down south of us. We were in the Detroit area, but we were in basically an all-white area where my parents put their roots down and stuff, so I didn't have to go and put up with them until I got into the Navy. And it was definitely an eye-opening experience having to go down there to the recruitment center down there in Detroit, growing up out in the country and stuff, having to deal with the big city stuff, and it's one of those, Scotty, beam me the hell out of here. That was just ridiculous. There's a whole other mindset dealing there with in the big city and stuff. You were in the Army, I believe, right?
So yeah.
You had a few more than we did in the Navy, but we still had our good share of Navy.
That was the first time I'd actually come up against what you might call real niggers. I thought that I was kind of hardened to it after 3 years in an integrated high school, but those southern coon types that I met at Chapel Hill High still came from, at that time, this was the very early 70s, fairly stable families. And I know now that the problems I had in high school are incredibly mild compared to what it's like now. There was no guns. There was no hard drugs. The school still functioned. There was no broken windows or anything, except when the niggers had rioted and torn things up a bit. Like one night they threw a Molotov cocktail through the window of the art room. But other than that, the school actually functioned, and it was possible to get something of an education there. But today, I can just imagine the horror that a white kid undergoes in an integrated high school where he and his race are in a minority. That's another thing about my own high school experiences, is the actual niggers were only about 10 or 12% of the entire student body. White kids were a majority there. We had one or two token Asians, but that was it. Of course, there were useless white kids, hippy-dippy white kids from the University of North Carolina who were all members of the SDS, and they were going, "Power to the people, man." I know now that my own experience was very mild compared to what it's become. In some respects, put it that way, I would not want to be a young white boy growing up today.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Anything else you guys would like to talk about? Anything racial or political or Donald Trump-wise? We might as well go back to Donald Trump. That's what Don and I started with tonight.
I wonder if he could be considered the great white hope. There's a white guy that's going to do something, maybe.
I think it would be really interesting to see what he did do if he ever became president. The whole thing might actually overwhelm him. Running a country or an empire this size is a little bit harder than just building big, huge, glitzy casinos.
I think the powers to be that are really running things may have painted themselves into a corner with Trump, because if he does make it and becomes the president, and after he's said what he's going to do, and it's resonating with the public mind, and if he gets in there and people have expectations and he's prevented, or he dies in a plane crash, or somehow it doesn't take place, I wonder if that's going to be the straw that broke the camel's back with the public, and they're finally going to throw their hands up and say, hey, we've got to take this government down, because no matter what we do, they still don't listen, they still won't get it right. We voted in Republicans when the Democrats are doing us dirty, and then the Republicans do the same damn thing. And now here comes Trump, and he's making promises to change things, and if it doesn't change, maybe then they'll get it. I don't know.
We have this idea that all we have to do is make people, quote-unquote, wake up. I've been hearing this for 40 years. Well, if we do this, or if we do that, or if we can somehow get this idea into their heads, then it will happen, Harold. They'll wake up. And I say, okay, fine, and then what? And basically, that's one of the reasons I wrote those 5 novels, is to try and give people some idea of what happens when they do wake up. What I'm questioning now is whether or not we as a people still have any kind of moral fiber or will to live left. I must admit, I'm not too sanguine about our chances now. I am, in a way. Maybe it's just I can't possibly envision a world without white people. I try to imagine what it would be like if we all do disappear, what it's going to be like on this continent before the Chinese finally move in. I think we know what it's going to be like when the Chinese move in. They will actually do what we didn't have the balls to do. They will either exterminate or enslave the blacks and the browns. And this time there ain't going to be no Lincoln coming along to set them free. And they will create a society similar to what communist China is right now, which is everybody living in little beehive apartment complexes and riding bicycles to work. They will probably be able to keep the white technology going for a fairly long time. That's one thing the Chinese were able to do. They reached a certain level of technological and social organization back around 4,000 years ago, and then they went on for century after century after century, and nothing changed. Eventually, the Mongols invaded and shook them up, but they absorbed the Mongols, and then they went on again for century after century. And then the British came, and the foreigners came, and they had the Boxer Rebellion, and they actually ended up becoming communists. But I don't think it was that much of a change for the Chinese. Instead of having an emperor and mandarins, they had commissars and Chairman Mao. But they were still socially organized in one gigantic ant heap, like they always have been for the past 40 centuries. And that's what's going to happen here when the white man is gone. In essence, North America, what's left of it, will be colonized, like the white men colonized Africa in the 19th century, because that's all North America will be. All the United States and Canada, what's left of it, will be is a large expanse of territory with a bunch of black and brown savages running around through the ruins, eating each other, and the Chinese, maybe the Russians. God, I hope it's the Russians. But either the Chinese or the Russians are going to just see a vacuum here. They're going to see this whole huge continent open for them to exploit. By that time, political correctness will be gone, and there'll be no moral considerations to restrain them, and they'll just come in and colonize this continent like we colonized Africa. And eventually, the whole continent will be Chinese.
Can I ask both of you, either one of you can answer, in fact, I'd like it if both of you would answer, what topics would you like to suggest for this call-in show that you think would attract people and motivate them to call?
For me, interest would be how the latest topics that's happening in the world, in the news, how that's affecting white people. That interests me, because you have to know what you're going to do in this world and how things are affecting you. That would interest me, because I would get an interpretation of the media news from a white perspective.
I think the big topic right now, obviously, is the death of Europe, which is what we're seeing right now. And this migrant thing actually didn't start just in the past few weeks. Before this, in July, you remember there was a big thing with migrants trying to storm the entrance of the Channel Tunnel in Calais in France, and so literally forced their way into Britain. It used to be these people would actually smuggle themselves into Europe in containers or the wheel wells of jets or battered vans covered with tools or something like that. But now they are literally invading. They are forcing their way in and demanding. They are demanding to be able to literally walk into a Northern European welfare state, and they've got their hands stuck out and say, gimme. And they're doing so by the hundreds of thousands. This is just a fantastic development. It's one I frankly never figured I'd see. I read The Camp of the Saints, but I don't suppose I ever believed that it would get this bad. Now it has. I'm amazed it's not getting any more play in the media than it is. But yeah, that right there is a major story. The fact that we are losing our ancestral homeland because they're being overrun by WOGs and nobody's doing anything about it.
Yeah, maybe a discussion on the latest political events and happenings in the world. Better than listening to Brian Williams. Oh, he's gone now.
Did they ever actually fire him?
He was supposed to get on some kind of a show. It was CNBC or one of the lower class stations. And then all of a sudden you didn't hear anything anymore. So maybe they did let him go. I think there's more to that story than meets the eye, too.
It sounds kind of odd that all of a sudden they finally figured out that he's lying about something. This guy was up there at the top of the network for how many years?
Oh, quite a while.
And nobody ever called him on any of these wild stories before? These big corporations, as you saw in that one hack on that movie company, they are riddled with intrigue and faction fighting and backstabbing and politics and tribalism and ego. It is a mistake to assume that the enemy is this big, huge monolith, absolutely united. He's not. They have just as many problems as we do with issues of character. It's just that they have more money and they got more lawyers to clean it up with.
That's why I've said before, I don't put too much faith in what I hear over the media. I take it with a grain of salt. They still can't figure out who killed Kennedy.
That's interesting. I think it's like Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is usually the correct one. I think it's the mob, rather than some weird conspiracy on the part of intelligence agency. The mob had reason to want Kennedy dead. Vengeance, because he screwed up their Central States Teamsters pension fund that they were using for a private ATM and building casinos in Las Vegas with. And also, Kennedy got elected in 1960 because of Sam Giancana and Richard Daley in Chicago basically turning out all the corpses to vote for him. And he then betrayed them by turning his stupid brother loose as attorney general and messing with the mob's business, and he had to be taught some manners. So to me, that's obvious, but I think the best way I've ever heard it put is this idea that Kennedy was supposedly assassinated by a secret cabal of right-wingers makes the incorrect assumption that Lyndon Baines Johnson would have been any more desirable to the American right than Kennedy was. Johnson had a horrible reputation among normal patriotic people in America even before he was president. I remember my parents used to call him Uncle Cornball. He was not liked. He was the total, complete machine politician. In his case, in his part of Texas, he would get the dead Mexicans out to vote for him.
Well, another thing Kennedy did was to piss off the Jews in more ways than one. He was trying to block their acquisition of nuclear weapons, and perhaps even more importantly, he was attacking the privately owned central banking system of the Rothschilds by having the U.S. Treasury print $5 bill Treasury notes as opposed to Federal Reserve notes.
Yeah.
And this was an attack kind of equivalent to maybe Andrew Jackson's attack on the second central bank. Now we're stuck with a third one. If you look at the history of the central banks, they appear to be quite willing to have people assassinated when their existence is threatened.
You sing in my song, I have this theory that, as Harold said, it's not one entity. I think in government there are gangs. I call them gangs. Like you got the CIA gang, you got the BATF, you've got the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. There's a bunch of gangs out there, and they're each feeding off the public, and they have their own agendas. And I think Kennedy just pissed off too many of the gangs. As Don said, he pissed off the Jews. Bobby Kennedy pissed off the organized crime. He pissed off the Cubans. He pissed off the bankers. The steel unions or the steel companies or something, he was doing something with them too. And there was a consensus among them. They had a sense to sit down and say, he's got to go. And I think that's what they did.
Guys, we got about 3 more minutes. Is there anything that you guys want to talk about or any comments you want to make during that time?
Trucker, you didn't answer the question. What do you think would be a good topic or good topics that would attract callers for this show?
Well, I thought the last one I wouldn't have joined in on is about the survivalism and all that. The current events that are going on, like the storming of Europe and all that kind of stuff, what it's going to end up being like over here might help to go and get some more people in here. I wish they'd go and wake up and get their moving vans packed, but that's for the regular podcast.
Well, we can talk about that. We can have a migration call-in show.
How about something along the lines, if you're planning to move to the Northwest, how do you financially make yourself viable to make the trip, the timing for liquidating your assets and stuff? Maybe somebody could call in with their stories, how they're making their way to make the final move to get out of the...
We've got that one couple out east. You heard Lacey a few weeks ago. She's going to be sending us regular updates. Hopefully we'll be seeing them sometime this spring on their scouting trip. We've had other people come up. The guy Matt we had on, he came up and saw us a while back. It is happening. It's just way too slow. But at any given time, I and some of the guys here are dealing with at least 2 or 3 people who are sincerely planning their scouting trip, sincerely planning their migration, or planning on moving back. So it's coming along. I have a sneaking suspicion events are going to outpace the pace of migration.
Right, they wait too long. If, they're not going to be able to make their migration.
It's like that scene from that one chapter in Freedom Sons. Eventually, people are going to have to flee to the Northwest. And what we see happening in Europe right now, all these thousands of WOGs charging the concertina wire on the Hungarian border, trying to break through and trying to get to the promised land of milk and honey in Sweden or Germany. There is going to be a white version of that, only ours is going to be a lot more desperate. And there's going to come a time when, even if it's not the party itself, just an awareness is going to seep through the white racial consciousness that the last decent place in the North American continent is the Pacific Northwest, and everybody's just going to pack whatever they can, throw them into whatever vehicle they can get to run, and flee town heading northwest, probably one step ahead of the nigger and Mexican mobs. It's going to get that bad. Okay, look, guys, if there is nothing else, our time is up. I'm sorry we couldn't get more callers, but we'll see what we can make of this footage here. I think we did get some good things said, and I think we can make a viable program out of it, and hopefully we'll be able to get some more people to call in next time. Thanks a lot for calling, guys.
All right, thank you.
All right, okay. You're welcome.
Good night.
All right.
All right, night, all.